Your first Preakness was the last time there wasn't a Derby winner in this race. How does that change the vibe when the Derby winner isn't here?
My first Preakness winner was Silver Charm.
No, your first time you were here, though, was 96, right?
Oh, the first time. Yes, that was weird. It was Grindstone had just beat me a nose, and he couldn't make it here. And I really wasn't sure where. I didn't really want to come here because my horse was pretty tired, but the owners wanted to take a shot at it. And I didn't really feel that strong about it. And he ran a bad fourth, I remember. But it was exciting. I remember ABC, they mic'd me up for the race. And somebody afterwards said, when did you realize your horse wasn't going to win? And I remember saying that when the ABC guys took my microphone off at the eighth pole, that's when I knew I didn't have a chance to win. So it was exciting, but, you know, we had just come off the Derby, and I'd almost won. I thought I won the Derby. And then the photo came up, and it was really disheartening. But it was a great experience coming here the first time.
So you had that first one under your belt. You came back in 97 with the Derby winner in Silver Charm, and that was a really loaded field that he beat.
You know, I remember I'd won the Derby, and I was in my hotel room, and I had a cassette tape, and I ordered a video machine in my room so I could watch it every day, all day. I'll never forget that. I just stayed in my little room at the hotel and invite people, hey, look at this, want to see the Derby with me? I was just so excited, I was just flying high. And then the day of the Derby, I walked up there thinking, like, what do you think? I said, I don't know, it doesn't matter, I don't care, you know, because I just won the Derby. So, you know, I said, I had no idea how he would run. And then when he won it, got up and won it, I thought he'd gotten beat, but he I was watching the wrong wire or whatever. And then when he won it, then it hit me like, wow, we're going for the Triple Crown. So that was like a totally different vibe. And so I called up friends, like, you know, I want to know how those other horses prepared, like Seattle Slough. And I remember calling my friend Steve Haskin. He says, could you find out how they worked those horses? And then when he told me how they got Secretariat ready in Seattle Slough, I said, if I do that, I'm not going to have a horse left. I mean, those are unbelievable horses, what they did with them to train that hard, you know, and still have something left. So I just stuck to my own way of doing it, and that's the way it went.
You came back in 98 with Real Quiet, same situation where you'd won the Derby, and he, as I recall, had a quite a rivalry there going that it developed with Victory Gallop. How confident were you coming into 98?
I was really confident he was going to win here in 98. He was just getting better. He really turned the corner like a week before the Derby, and he worked like lights out, and I really felt good about it because I had Indian Charlie. And then so I came here with him, and I remember he had number 11, and they said, you can't win from the 11. It's too far out. But I felt really, really strong, you know, And so, he got the job done, but, you know, that Victory Gallop came running, and I remember being on the track right after the race, and I heard Gary Stevens, who had picked up the mount on Victory Gallop, I heard him tell Elliot Walden, I said, I didn't ride him right. I said, now I know what to do. And I'll never forget listening to that. I'm going like, uh-oh, you know, like, but he was right.
Let's go to 2001, and point given, I have to think you were probably pretty confident, even though he didn't win the Derby, when you led him over for the Preakness.
You know what? That's probably the most disappointing Derby, because I had Congaree in him, and I thought there was no way I could lose that Derby, and the horse didn't run that day. Track was really hard and fast, and they were chasing a really fast pace, and he just didn't, you know. I remember Gary Stevens came back. He says, you know, boss, I know how to ride him now. You know, I says, I think I know what I need to do. I go, well, that's good, you know. So when I came here and Monarcos had won it, and I was really, you know, when you come here, you just want that, like, a revenge type redemption race. And so with point given, I felt really good. I really felt really confident about him. I go, you know, we'll get it done. And so, and he got out there. He, he got it done, and so that was really, it was satisfying to know that. But I really thought if I was going to win the Triple Crown, it was going to be with that horse. So, but unfortunately, we whiffed it in the Derby, and that happened.
War Emblem, a horse you pick up in the middle of April, an upset winner of the Derby. How were you feeling about him coming into the Preakness?
I felt really confident, you know, but I knew there was a speed horse that had come in from California, and they were going to throw some speed at him. So I remember, I think it was Jeff Bondi, a friend of mine, he brought a horse, but his horse flew out of the gate, and he just took off way in front of us, you know. So Victor Espinosa was able to just sit off of him, and he came and held on and won. So I felt really good about him. He came back and run well, and we were still flying high from winning the Derby, and everybody was a little bit upset because they felt like I stole the Derby because I bought the horse a month before. So I was coming in here with a little bit of, you know, people were sort of like not feeling like, but I think once he won the Preakness, and then he was legitimized himself.
2010, looking at Lucky, had just a brutal trip from the rail in the Derby. Was there a sense in your mind that you wanted to come here to show people that he was really as good as you thought he was?
Yeah, I was, you know, first few days after the Derby, I wasn't going to come here. I remember I said, he looks like he's pretty beat up, tired, and, you know, laying down. And it took him about a week. And all of a sudden I stayed back a week. And all of a sudden I saw signs he was starting to come. And by Monday, I remember I sent a text out to the ownership group that we're going to go to the Preakness, get ready. Not only are we going to go to the Preakness, but we can't get beat. I mean, that's how good he was doing. And he got here, and I felt really good about it. That was an exciting win for me because we knew, you know, he was the best horse in the Derby, and, you know, he got to show it in the Preakness.
2015, you've got a horse that people are thinking is the budding superstar he turned out to be. And then the skies just open up right before the race. How unsettling was that?
Well, American Pharoah, you know, I remember we won the Derby with him, and my wife asked me, I said, by the way, I said, I thought we had a super horse. How come he barely won the Derby? I said, you know, I was thinking the same way. I said, you know what? I really think he wants to just be on the lead. He just wants to get out there and go, so we're going to just let him run. And all of a sudden, the skies opened up. That they were on the track, and it was raining, and it was pelting down, and they were out there, and I told Victor, you know what, just put him on the lead, and if he gets beat, it's my fault, and if he gets beat, I'll just go home. You know, once he won the Derby, I was satisfied with that, you know. So, but his race in the Preakness was probably the most impressive of all my winners. He went out there, and he hooked the horse early, and he went fast early. And then when he turned for home, he just kicked another gear and took off, and right there, I knew this is the horse that's going to get the Triple Crown. I mean, this now we're talking. This is a superior horse. And so then that's when the excitement started, because we knew we had a chance to win the Triple Crown.
So you had the Triple Crown, and you come back with Justify in 18, and you think he's good enough to do that, but was the pressure less because you already had one?
It was, but, you know, you still you always have pressure when you win the Derby. I thought, you know, here's a horse that could win the Triple Crown. You know, we just got to get through this one. And, it was raining every day. I couldn't do much with him. And so and I always told Mike Smith, you know, do me a favor. Whatever you do, try to save a little bit for me. I said, the smaller the margin you win by, it's easier for me as a trainer. And so we had the fog and all that was going on, the wet track, and turned for home. I couldn't see anything, and I said, "Man, I hope that white face is in front." And he made the lead, and then they disappeared again, and it looked like he barely held on. And I thought, "Wow!" I was like, "Well, he won, but I don't think that doesn't look like a Triple Crown type of horse." I thought maybe that was it, and then when I talked to Mike Smith, I said, well, I guess that's it, huh? We got to the bottom of it. He says, oh, no, he could have won by more. And the horse was pushing him out the whole way. And you know, so then I got excited. And then we got him back here to the barn, and the horse looked like he didn't even run. So we knew there we got a chance to do it again.
So the casual fan would think, well, you'd want to win by as much as you could, but you wanted to win by a small margin, you told Mike, to make sure there was more gas in the tank.
Yeah, he said he cut it a little close. He didn't see Bravazo come in late, but he's like, I knew I had those other horses measured, and the other, I didn't know it was that close, but once the horse got to him, he says he kicked back on again, so and nobody saw that, so that was... Then he made, you know, he gave us a little confidence that we still had a chance.
Could get the eighth Preakness with Improbable. Do those kinds of records still mean big things to you?
I know, to me, it means it's more for the ownership group. I want to win it for them because it's exciting, and the Preakness, the classics are so exciting. And you know, once you put that saddle on them, you know, you're not thinking about who's in the race or nothing. You'd like to just turn for home, and that rush of watching your horse in the lead and winning the race. I mean, there's not a better feeling or excitement winning these races. So, you know, hopefully that, you know, the horse is doing really well, and he is a slight favorite, but I think he's doing really well, and he could, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he could win it.
I'm guessing you have had a chance to interact with championship coaches in other sports. I know Belichick's around the track some, for example. Any of those guys ever ask you anything that kind of surprised you or was particularly interesting to you?
You know, I had the coach of the New Orleans Saints.
Sean Payton.
Sean Payton. A couple of years ago, he was at the Derby draw with the owner of the horse that had the year of Farrell, maybe. I'm not sure. They had a horse in there. And he asked me about, like, when I train him, he asked me a question about if how I prepare him. And I remember talking to him about it, you know, how – and so –
what's the similarities or the differences?
Yeah, I just, you know, what do you do with them? Do you back off or do you do whatever? But he's the only one. And Belichick, we've hung out with him, and I said the only difference in my sport is that, you know, you've never been on the sideline trying to make a call, and some guy's been drinking all day wants to take a selfie with you. I said that's the way it is, and you have to be nice to everybody. I said that's the difference.
How do you see this Preakness, and where does Improbable fit into the mix?
I think there's a lot of speed in there. There's a lot of horses with a sort of the same style, you know. So that's why the break's going to be so important.
Thank you.
Thank you.